All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire basketball hoops podcast. We're lucky, Eli Bedker, Jeremy Moss here. Day late gives us a lot more content. Thank you, college basketball.
Yeah, it's been a wild 48 hours, and it seems like we've said that a number of times this year, but this week is no exception.
Exactly. And so, our website, if you're stumbling across us, because thank you, first of all, MWR.com, Facebook, Mountain West Wire. We do all sorts of stuff there. Twitter, we have some fun, so don't take us too seriously, MWC Wire. Where should we start with? What happened Friday? Thursday?
We can start with Friday's news with the whole FBI and the email release via Yahoo Sports. That was a pretty wild story.
All right, so if you lived under a rock, this has been going on since... at least publicly, August?
I believe the news was initially reported around August, September, October, somewhere around there.
Started with, basically, if you follow college hoops closely, there's the stuff with Louisville, agents, FBI getting involved, money. It's been going on for a while. Let me ask you this, because there's going to be very few games talked about this podcast just because day later, and there's a lot more other more intriguing stuff to chat about. So the FBI is involved with college basketball because, tell me why. I know I asked you this before, but why are they really involved? Because to me, what's the point of the FBI being involved? Aren't there more important things for them to be doing?
That's a common question that's been asked a number of times, and on the surface, it seems silly that the FBI would be investigating something as simple as agents paying college athletes, most of which are 17, 18-year-olds, money to attend certain universities or to sign with shoe companies. But when it comes down to it, the reason that the FBI is involved is because it's fraud, it's bribery, and it's illegal to be doing what some of these agents are doing. So the news that was reported on Friday by Pat Ford and Pete Thamel on Yahoo Sports was ASM, which is a sports agency represented by Andy Miller and Christian Dawkins. They had extensive conversations with recruits and agents over the years. Some of the names that you would recognize from this year, I know Miles Bridges from Michigan State was involved. Wendell Carter from Duke was involved. And we'll get into the Mountain West names here in a little bit. But these agents had allegedly paid off some of these college athletes or the families to entice them to bring these athletes to their agency. So I guess the most interesting thing is that most of the time, the athletes that were being paid by Miller or Dawkins ultimately did not choose to sign with ASM Sports Agency. So that's kind of funny that they had to go about this in the way that they did and were fairly unsuccessful. But the big picture is that it's a big deal that there's so much under-the-table activity that's going on in college basketball, and it's just completely affecting the integrity of the sport when you have some of these major 3-, 4-, 5-star recruits that are being involved in something that has been stated by the NCAA for years and years that it's not permissible by the NCAA, and it will not be tolerated. And to be honest, this is probably the biggest college sports scandal that has happened in quite some time.
Is it, though?
I would think so, because you just have so many high-profile athletes that are being involved, and it can completely change what college basketball is like here, because you have columnists like Gary Parrish and just all different sorts of writers that are talking about how these scandals could impact college basketball, because once again, it brings up the idea or the notion that what is amateurism doing for college basketball? And by that, I mean, should these athletes be able to sign endorsement deals or sign shoe contract deals while they're still in college? Because if they're not allowed to do anything that's financial based or monetarily based, then you'll continue to see these instances where you have people like Christian Dawkins or people like Andy Miller that want to go under the table so that they can provide a good investment for their sports agencies, because I know that Dennis Smith for NC State, who was there a year ago, he was paid up to $75,000 under the table. And if I was someone with no morals, if I were to pay a 17 or 18 year old $75,000 now, and that would guarantee me, say, $5 million, $10 million, $20 million in the future when they make it big in the NBA, that's an investment that you have to take, because you invest 20, 25, 50, $75,000 now and get multi-million dollars in return. That sounds like a pretty good deal from an economic standpoint if you're able to get away with it.
It's like there's a ton of stuff to cover with this. I just think, like, it's if here's the article you should go read. It's a couple years old. It was done by Stephen Godfrey, who does stuff with SB Nation. It's called, just search Stephen Godfrey Bagman. It's college football, but this obviously happens in basketball by what we've discovered the past, I guess, 6 months, but most importantly the past weekend where more names came out. It goes on about the ways about how deals get done to buy players. And the lengths he did to get the story, which he's a very good reporter, so he's does amazing stuff. I've known him a little bit, doing a few things with him here and there. But the way he got his info, like, is compared to what the FBI is doing, he's freaking genius or amazing how he's able to get quotes by he would do like the guys, because guys don't want their names out. Nothing's technically on the record. It's all nothing because nobody's gonna give their name out. I gave player X $200,000 to go to Alabama football or go to Florida or something. This wasn't the agent thing like Andy Miller doing investment. Like, I gave Kyle Kuzma, University of Utah, got 10 grand to, and so there could be issues there where I'm at. It's kind of bigger story for why I'm listed to radio papers and stuff about college hoops. It's investment, just like I said, to sign their rookie deal who get $20 million for 3 years or something. But the football thing was just to get the guys on campus. So he would have his phone behind voicemail, or he wouldn't, they wouldn't even allow him to do that. I don't think he would take, he would say, oh, I go run the bathroom real quick. They guys probably knew, like, knew he's getting his quotes, but not their names. He'd leave himself voicemails. He'd scribble, try to scribble notes on napkins, because if you're a reporter at this thing, nobody's going to want to talk to you because of what you're doing, even though they kind of, they set ground rules. So go read that. It's a very long read. It's like a couple years old, but he goes to great lengths, describes how he did it as well, which is I think that's fascinating as well. But it's kind of the same thing, like these similar things, like you're going to buy players no matter what. So that's, while it's not totally related, it's the same thing of funneling players to a certain school for a reason. But this situation, like the way it affect the conference, like we had Patrick McCaw, who, what did he get? He's at Golden State right now. He got a there's more numbers. What did he got? Well, just, it was alleged a dinner or something or something along those lines. Is that correct? When he was at
Yes,
UNLV?
he and his family received a meal that was approximately $180 back on back in March of 2016.
Was his the
And
PF Chang's meal? Was that him?
no, this one was at a, I believe, a hotel in Las Vegas. It's not coming to me right now. I don't know who got the PF Chang's email. It's funny because on the financial statements, and you can check that on Yahoo Sports, it lists a number of these places where these meals or these services occurred. So
We should clarify. They're not statements. It's like a spreadsheet.
yeah, it is a spreadsheet. One of them was, what's it called? I'm blank on the name right now, but yeah, there's spreadsheets that just outline the financial details as well as the pretty mind-boggling that these individuals thought that they would be able to get away with this. But in McCaw's case, his family received about $180 for a meal on March 23rd, 2016, I believe, after McCaw had already declared for the NBA. So in terms of
It's like, come on,
severity,
what's the deal?
McCaw is on low as the list as possible. Yeah, and I get that. And some people thought that it was clickbait when I posted this, but by definition or by rule, this is an improper benefit that McCaw and his family allegedly received. And I know if I were in charge, if I had Mark Emmert's job, an individual's family receiving $180 for a meal is not something that would even come close to allowing a player to be ineligible. That just seems silly to me. But by rule, it's something that could impact the eligibility of a player or could impact a university. I don't think that this, unless it balloons into something bigger, is much of a big deal at all for UNLV. But like I said, by rule, that is an improper benefit. And if we want to transition to Malik Pope, that's a bit more serious because he received four digits in money, allegedly. He received $1,400 in improper benefits from Andy Miller and Christian Dawkins from ASM. And that is far more serious than McCaw's family receiving an email. Or excuse me, a meal.
Yeah, and there's others, like there's, I saw a guy in alert say some guy $40. And so there are a couple things about, well, here's the deal with Pope. He's done. There's, because I was reading somewhere on the, I think it's from Dana O'Neill in The Athletic, was going like, what's the severity? What are the actual suspensions, or what's the deal for guys taking X amount of money? Because there's range from guys getting six figures to guys getting a $50 meal. And part of it too, if you read through between the line, not between the lines, but read part of it, there's pause, there's deniability by some of these guys, because there, because again, it's not a, we don't have exact, like, oh, we don't have a signed receipt at Club X or Bar X or restaurant A, B, or C. We have him putting in his expense report saying $180, this player or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, when you look at that stuff, it's not exact, like I said, it's not exactly official. You know what I mean? Like, it's, he put, it's just notes. And so there's sometimes, oh, it's a family member. I met with his mom, his cousin, his kid, his, or not kid, but you know what I mean? Like, a relative, an uncle or something, or an associate of some sort, say his AAU coach, where there are some players, if it's a $100 meal, you may not have known about it because it was their meeting with the family member, but they put his name down because it's for this player. And so there's a few players who may not know, but $1,400, come on. And this was the time when Pope was considering to go pro, correct?
Yeah, it was. The financial statements, I believe, only go up to December 31st of, I think it's, what is it, 2015?
Yeah, it's like a 2 year period maybe at most, or a
Yeah,
1 year
there are a
period.
few, there are a few different timelines. So it doesn't say when it starts either, but most balance sheets run in a 1 year span. So we don't know when that allegedly took place, like the other spreadsheet that outlined in McCaw's case of when his improper benefit occurred. But in Malik Pope's case, that's a bit more of an interesting timeline because of where SDSU was as a program when Malik Pope signed on. And as we remember, Steve Fisher was the head coach at that point, and Brian Dutcher was the assistant, and many of the current assistants for the Aztecs were also on that coaching staff. So Brian Dutcher, he had a press conference on Friday, and he completely denied any sort of affiliation with the ASM agents. He said, "I'm confident that our staff has done the right things. Neither I or any member of our staff knows Andy Miller or any of his associates or are associated with him in any way." So
Do you believe
he
that?
has.
'Cause I don't. With
Here's the
that
thing.
amount of money, that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, 1400, it's a decent amount of money. There's the guys getting six figures, but to say there's nobody on staff that knows a thing about it, maybe, but when it's, I don't know, I just don't buy it.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. The what does need to be mentioned is that the mo almost all the assistant coaching staff and head coaching staff that was there when Malik Pope signed on to be an Aztec is currently there right now, minus Steve Fisher and I believe minus Jay Morris, I want to say. So, and I believe there are other couple more names, but Justin Hudson, Dave Velasquez, Tim Shelton, and Mark Fisher will all assistant coaches or associate head coaches at that time. So I would imagine at least some of these guys even knew about ASM Sports Agency. I don't know what their affiliations are. I do know that, and we discussed this a few days ago as well when the news came out. Tony Bland, who was the USC assistant coach, who was also a former San Diego State assistant coach, he was one of the four assistant coaches that was arrested in the fall for his affiliation with the FBI investigation. So he has a hearing on, I want to say in April, for his wrongdoing. He was on the staff, I believe, 2013, and he was one of the two or three guys that heavily recruited Malik Pope and brought him to San Diego State University. However, he wasn't the main coach that brought Pope to San Diego State, and that was Justin Hudson, who was on the staff then and is currently on the staff. So it's unclear if Bland has any say in this, and I've done quite a bit of research looking back to articles and headlines of Malik Pope's recruitment in 2012 and 2013, and I just haven't found anything right now that would indicate Tony Bland is involved to some extent. But it's definitely something to keep tabs on because he is one of the most mentioned people in all these events in the FBI scandal. That's Tony Bland, and it'll be interesting to see what happens from San Diego State from here on out. But like you said, it's very plausible to believe that Malik Pope has played his last game in an Aztec uniform.
Well, part of it, like if you have a subscription to The Athletic, go read what Dana O'Neill did over the weekend. Or, yeah, I guess, either was it the 23rd? So sometime Friday. Yeah, Friday, I believe, or Saturday morning. It kind of goes through, like, risk-reward. Okay, basically, from the NCAA bylaws, $1,000, even with repayment, you're sitting out a minimum of 1 year. So here's what comes down. It's like there's reason. There's a, it's a weird reason. If you wondered why aren't all these teams being or suspending players? Because I believe isn't only San Diego State with Pope, and I believe an LSU player. Are they the only ones who I think are sitting out?
Texas's Eric Davis is the other player that's sitting out. I believe only Pope and Davis
that's
are the players involved in the Yahoo report that have been suspended, except Sean Miller, who's the Arizona head coach.
Oh boy, that's another story.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The reason Pope is probably suspended because Aztecs are doing the right thing, I believe, because they want to look into it. So he's suspended from all team activities. Some people try to put technicalities on Facebook. He's not suspended. I'm like, dude, he's suspended. Come on. He's done. But like, well, maybe he'll be back. I'm like, no, he's $1,000. He's going to be gone for the year. Aztecs are going to have to give up any games they have won this year. However, the reason there's risk reward because Aztecs, the only way they're making the tournament is if they win the Mountain West Conference tournament. They might not even get a opening round bye just because how jumbled it is and how they've been playing this year. So I guess their hope is maybe they'll get things together and maybe something magical could happen. And even if those games are vacated with Pope, it won't impact them going forward if they do happen to win the Mountain West Conference tournament. I'm thinking that's what their logic is. Like, okay, it's a lot of money. It's going to be, they know these rules. They know it's a minimum year, even if he's paid it back, which we don't know if he has or not. That's first of all, or arranged to get that paid back. So my guess is they're doing this just in case they do. The only postseason they're going to is if they win the Mountain West tournament, because you and me joked on Twitter, like they could have like 5 wins or 6 wins because everything's vacated possibly at some point, but they're within the rules now because they haven't played him going forward ineligible. So they could go to the conference tournament and win it and go to NCAAs with like 8 wins officially. But my thinking is teams aren't going to sit players because NCAA still has, look how long it took the UNC thing, 2 decades. And they got slapped in the wrist because they technically said every student had eligibility or not eligibility, but access to take those classes. So it's like, well, loophole or whatever, but why sit a player if they're going to vacate later, like Louisville, if they win the title, everybody knows they won the title. It's great. You know what I mean? They're not taking the rings back to players again. They may take a banner down, but you still got that exposure. You earn money from it, whatever it comes back. You may have to repay some stuff, but why sit players down if you don't have to? So I kind of thought, you and me did too, is why I thought a lot of people would be out, but it's just those two guys. And they can't, NCAA can't really technically prove it. So why? They'll take the risk and get it vacated 5 years down the road.
Yeah, there definitely has something to be said about risk and reward, and there are a couple things I want to mention with that. The first is on Saturday prior to the games that took place, Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, was interviewed by the CBS crew with Greg Gumbel and Seth Davis and those guys. And what he said, in large part, it was what you'd expect from Emmert to say. But one thing that he did mention that was worth noting is that the NCAA won't be responsible for suspending coaches or players due to this investigation. That all goes down to what the universities want to do. So
why,
in San Diego State's
ridiculous.
Case, they chose to...
It's ridiculous. I mean, it is.
I think it's ridiculous, but it is what the NCAA chose to do. I guess the one thing worth mentioning is that, say I'm associated with UN. Barry is involved in this. He's their point guard. He's listed in the Yahoo report for accepting $20,000. So, in the case that this is proven true, and the university will have to vacate wins for the 2018 season, okay, so be it. So why don't we just allow Barry to play, and if we end up winning back-to-back national championships and one of them has to get vacated, then that's how it goes. But, I mean, the chances that North Carolina is able to repeat without a guy like Joel Berry is probably pretty slim.
All right, so you mentioned Mark Emmert on good old CBS and whatever. He's a dummy. Here's my thinking. if you think I'm copying from other people, it's not the case. I just happened to hear it before. But, like, go read CBS and Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander. Go listen to their podcast. I've had the same thoughts they've had for a while. Here's the thing. like we mentioned earlier on, that oh, you guys are getting money, great. They may or may not know, and in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big a deal because, at least from my opinion, maybe I'm not gonna speak for you, but if you look what happened at Baylor, like not even the Dave Blessing, which is unimaginable, but the stuff recently with Art Briles and football over at Jerry Sandusky, Penn State, stuff like that, and what's going on at, I guess those are the two main. Or even Michigan State a little bit with Larry Nassar being up there at the university for the team doctor, I believe, for most sports. I think that's way worse than any than giving guy even $100,000, because I just think that's way worse because of what happened to all the victims and everything going on. Or even like even look at New Mexico or Colorado State. I think that stuff's way worse than what's going on for giving a guy 150 bucks. I think. And which is odd because NCAA, I've always thought forever, people are like, pay the players, give the players money. Well, they got the COA. It's like, great. Okay, fine. That's a little bit here and there. But I honestly do not see the harm. Let them, like, if you listen to those guys over at CBS, like, oh, look at college hockey or baseball. I guess in hockey is different. You can have an agent if you're in college hockey. You can enter the draft more than once if you're in Major League Baseball to return to school or not. Why can't, like, look at the Malik Pope, not Malik Pope, but Patrick McCaw. You said the date was March 26th of that year, right?
Yes, his career with UNLV had already finished.
So why was he, why would he be penalized for getting a meal afterwards? Is it because he didn't officially declare?
I think it's because I don't know this timeline that well yet, but I think it's because potentially he's still part of the university.
But I
I don't
know,
know that for sure, though.
but you know, guys, like, and for, you see it a lot in college football. Guys who get drafted, there's some inane rule where you can't attend certain activities with your team you're drafted for if your semester or isn't done for some reason, which is weird. So guys can go participate in some stuff, but they have agents. So my thinking is him with Parrish, like, why can't these guys, like, his big deal is, like, you know this guy, like, whoever's gonna be the top 10 pick. Let's just say Brandon McCoy. He'd say he's gonna be a lottery pick. He's not going to be, but you never know. Like, one and done guy, essentially. Why can't he have a deal with an agent just to help him out, whether it be like if you have an agent, they give you little loans all the time. I know an agent who represents guys in the NFL. They will give loans to guys like, oh, he's not a high profile guy, so he's not doing a like $20,000 loans or here's a card, you pay me back when you get your signing bonus. But he gets guys like undrafted guys, later round guys, like nothing fancy. But he'll, yeah, here's dinner money or rent money, you know what I mean? Stuff like that that he knows he'll get back because he'll get signed. Pause. Why can't First off, why can't you have representation during college? What's the harm with that? If a guy's going to be basically a one semester athlete, why is that such a big deal? Because you can talk to agents whenever you want in college. You just can't take a meal, can't take a suit, can't take a car, can't take anything. Why can't they have some sort of representation or have a guy know, you know what, he's going to be a 1 or 2 year guy. Here's a grand a month for your college career because I'm your agent. I know you'll get, I'll get it back eventually from you. Why shouldn't that be legal? Or be within the rules.
Well, I don't want to respond like I'm defending the NCAA because in these sort of situations, I certainly don't. And like you said, I think when you're dealing with things that aren't financial based, like what happened at Baylor or Penn State or what's going on right now in Michigan State, that should definitely be handled in a far more strict manner than something as silly as an agent paying for a meal for a player's parents. I have always been supportive of the idea that players should be able to be represented by agents and should be able to sign endorsement deals if the market thinks that they're worthy of that because it just makes sense. And if you already have these guys that are being paid under the table, then if you legalize that and if you allow players to sign endorsement deals with shoe companies or with agents, then it just allows the process to be more fluid, and you don't have to penalize universities for doing something that really would just happen a few months after the fact. Because if you're paying players, or if you're allowing players to sign endorsement deals while they're in college, they're going to do so in the months following, and it doesn't affect the integrity of the game. The recruiting will still be handled the same way that it is in. As it has been in the last few years, and I read something the other day that actually said that more recruits are going to power conferences now than at any point in college basketball history. I want to say that 95% of the top 200 recruits over the last few years have selected power conference universities, so that's something worth noting. But I don't know. I feel like it's time for athletes to be able to receive some sort of compensation if the market decides that that's what they should receive. And this doesn't mean that universities should give a stipend to players just because they're part of the softball team, or if they swim, or they're on the basketball team. I think if there is a legitimate market for players to be represented, whether it be on commercials, or if it is an endorsement deal with Under Armour, or if it's signed through an agency, or an agency of some sort, then I think that that should be allowed. I
Yeah.
just don't see the I don't see
Maybe
the
because,
drawbacks in that.
yeah,
Yeah.
because like what Paris says, like you think I'm copying, but it makes sense. If you make it legal, what's the problem? You know what I mean? It's like if you make what's illegal legal now, what, like, not to say nothing's illegal, but it cleans it up overnight. Literally, if Mark Emmert were to say tomorrow, any NCAA collegiate athlete can earn money on their likeness, that would clean it up overnight. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think
Because
you're wrong. And
what
it's going to happen
cheating,
regardless.
yeah, what cheating would be done? Like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, like his example, again, great. Like, okay, his people will come up. Well, power schools are going to get the best players. You said they already are getting the player best players, right? If you're already going to go to, if you're the top 10 recruits, you're going to choose from Duke, UNC, Kansas, UCLA, maybe some school in your region that's pretty good. Arizona, you know what I mean? Like, if you're from some dude from Washington, you might consider Gonzaga, Washington, Pac-12 schools, any, you know what I mean? Like, they're already getting the best players. Like, what's the deal? What's the difference going to be? Because his example, and I like it as well, is like, well, you first off obviously got to be eligible to grades to get into school. That's not going to change because you're still a student. If you're ineligible, well, guess what? You can't play basketball and people aren't going to pay you. You know what I mean? If you're not in the court, why is Under Armour going to give you a shoe deal? You know what I mean? Or give you a, like, if you're not playing, you got to be eligible still if you're there for more than a year. So that it gives them incentives to still be eligible to maintain their whatever 2.0, which is not very hard to maintain. But okay, I'm choosing between Duke because hey, I can get a Lexus for my during the about what, you know what I mean? Like, you can get a car for free, a lease or something for a year. Okay, or I'm going to get $1,800 a month from some local company. Or if I'm going to go to UCLA, where they're going to give me just 100 grand to play basketball from somewhere, take the better deal. What's the problem? There's no cheating involved. He's going to go to one of those schools anyways, right? So that's my point. You take the best deal out there, and the best players are likely going to go to the best schools. Yeah, there might be a smaller, not smaller school, but I look into it. Like, there's rich alumni anywhere. And so if you wanted to build some powerhouse at Harvard, you could get all the billionaires who went to Harvard to give a lot of money to get good players to go there. But again, you still got to be eligible to go to the university. So it's not going to change the dynamic of who's going where. Just because Kansas has this huge deal with Nike or whomever they're with, it's fine. But look where other, like, Stanford doesn't have a great basketball program, but look at their famous alumni. If they want to put in money to go to get players there, what's the harm? Or there's some company in Rinky Dink Town, whatever, the pizza dealership wants to give this guy to go to Southwest Missouri State for $500 a month. He wants to go there because that's his best deal. What's the harm? He's going to go to one of those school levels anyways. Stephen F. Austin, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get some player who's amazingly great to go. I know the Western Kentucky guy was an oddity a little bit this past year or two, that mess. But are you really going to say you're going to get a guy who's going to go to Sam Houston State over University of Texas because they offer more money? Probably not.
I don't even know if it would be worth it from a financial standpoint,
Yeah.
but it's kind of rhetorical. But how would it hurt anyone if, say, Chandler Hutchison, who plays for Boise State at Taco Bell Arena, if Taco Bell offered for Hutchison to be on a commercial throughout the years? Okay, you have some promotion. If Hutchison makes, if he has 20 points at a Boise State home game, everyone gets a free taco or something, and you have Chandler Hutchison on a commercial. He makes a few dollars off of that. It's good exposure for everyone involved. That harms absolutely no one. It just
Exactly.
doesn't, it doesn't make any sense. And like, I want to go back to my old point. This doesn't mean that universities should pay players just for the sake that they're representing the
And it's
university,
not.
because
That's
yeah,
your
that's
argument people
silly.
had. It's not going to come from the school because people are like, oh, mid-majors are going to be bankrupt. University of Utah State, New Mexico, WAC schools, Mountain West School, Grand, who look at Grand Canyon. Maybe they could put point up money because they're the for-profit university. This is not going to come from the school. And so it's, yeah, just continue with, I just wanted to mention that. It's going to come from some donor or some dealership or whatever, sponsorship.
Yeah, yeah. Like there's an example that Gary Parish always comes up with, that it's some Alabama offensive lineman if they want to be on a billboard for a truck dealership in the area. That doesn't hurt anyone. And it just, it's economics, and it's how the market determines your value. If the market thinks that DeAndre Ayton of Arizona is worth $1 million as an 18-year-old athlete, then if he's able to sign an endorsement deal that's worth $1 million as an 18-year-old student athlete, then so be it. It doesn't affect recruiting, because if these guys are being paid under the table, if Duke's able to offer a guy like Grayson Allen $50,000 to come play for the university, and that's under the table, then if it's no longer under the table, it's still going to be the same result, based on prestige, based on money, based on head coaching, all of that. So it would not affect the integrity of college basketball. It really wouldn't affect that much, other than the fact that the game is just it just would make more sense. I don't know how else to go around it.
It's too easy. Because I could write, I was going to think of an article to write about it, but like, there's so many thoughts. Like, it's been written about a lot. I'm like, we'll just talk about it. It's like, amateurism is dead, essentially, but it's still alive. You can make the case. You can't help, because here's an example I go back to. You may not be familiar with this guy, because college football, an Olympian. This guy, Jeremy Bloom, downhill mogul skier on the U.S. Olympic team, played college football for Colorado, University of Colorado, or Colorado University Buffs. He could. Because if you're Olympian, because look at the Olympics, they got, technically they're amateurs, really? Are they? They get millions of dollars. Like, the dream team, NBA players now go in the Olympics, used to be just college guys. It was like in the early 2000s, late 90s, I believe. He was eligible, ineligible. It seemed like every other month there was a deal with him being able to play for Colorado or not. Because he's Olympian, because Olympians can make money off their likenesses to whatever deal may be. Like, the, and here's the thing, Olympians don't make a ton of money anyways, typically, if you think about it. Like, if you're a curler, or if you're downhill skiing, unless you're like Lindsey Vonn, who people know, or Bodie Miller, who people are familiar with those names, yeah, you can make some pretty good money, but how much money is the guy on the squash team going to make? You know what I mean? Or the U.S. women's hockey team won gold medal. They were upset getting $1,000 a month during the Olympic year only for 6 months. Like, they can't live off of that.
Wow.
So, or the U.S. women's national soccer team is going to boycott because they need as much money as the men, even, which deservedly so, not just because you want equal pay, same sport, but they're way better as well. They're winning gold, they're winning World Cups, man. The U.S. men's team's not qualifying. And so why can't, like, that's kind of off topic, but the money's, you want to make the money while you're there. So give him an agent. If this guy in 2 years is going to be worth $15 million for a number two pick overall, it would be smart to have an agent. Why would you not want to have a guy representing you? And if he floats you a grand a month, cool. Because agents are, like, let's kind of bring it back a little bit, because we're going big picture, but I think we're both on the same page. Also, here's the thing. If you're the 12th guy on the bench, you get nothing. Well, sorry, you're the 12th guy on the bench. You're not getting playing time anyways. So it's like, it's life. Come on, it sucks. It's great sometimes. It sucks sometimes. If you're the 55th guy in the football team or the 100th guy in the roster, nothing. But sometimes they may pay you just heck of it. Like, there's a guys who have personalities. Like, there was the kicker from, was it Central Florida or South Florida? YouTube channel got shut down because he's being creative and making a few bucks on a YouTube channel. So, like, why can't they do that? Because here's the thing. You still have to be eligible to play. And if you're not eligible to play, like I said, who's going to pay you, right? Unless you have, like, an agent who knows you're probably going to be a high draft pick in any sport. You're not going to have a sponsorship from some shoe company, some local pizza joint, some real estate company, whatever it may be. You're not going to get that if you're not eligible. Why are they going to pay you if you're not on the court to promote their stuff? So, not say make everything legal, but let them have an agent. Get rid of the one-and-done rule, because that's ridiculous as well. If you're good enough to go to high school, go play pro. I know that's protecting the NBA Players Association for the older guys who want to stick in the league for another year or two to get that contract, but make it all legal. But here's the thing, like, if you're a sport, like here in University of Utah, where I'm at, the gymnastics team, women's gymnastics team is very popular. They can go out and get a deal somewhere in town if they want to. At BYU, the men's volleyball team, extremely popular, very good. I played water polo. If you're in UCLA, if you're at Cal, if you're at these huge schools, Long Beach State, that are always really good, I guarantee if you're not in California, you can get money for being a water polo guy at Stanford to get some dealership or get $100. You know what I mean? Or $1,000 a month. You can be on the baseball team. You can be on the hockey. Think of the hockey team for University of Minnesota, or like Air Force or Denver. You're going to make money there. You know what I mean? If you play baseball for, like, a Big West school. You're going to make money. If you're on, my examples are endless. You get my point. If you have a good personality and people are willing to pay you, why can't you get paid? As long as you're eligible, you're good to go. I don't know. I think we've said enough on that part, right?
Yeah, it just makes perfect sense to me. It's just how the market works. And say in the case of Chandler Hutchison again, I don't see how it would be a detriment of any sort if he would be able to sign with an agent as an 18-year-old signing on to play basketball at Boise State as a three-star recruit. And then as he continues to develop into a potential NBA draft selection, which he is at this point, I think if you have an agent that can help you along with that way, not only does it help Hutchison and Boise State as he's a student athlete, but it also helps his transition to the NBA. And as we've seen a lot in recent years with some of these lackluster draft classes and some players just don't seem ready for the NBA level, I think that is something that would at the very least entice the NBA, which would allow players to have some sort of representative helping them along the way.
It's good help. Like there's something with Lamar Jackson, NFL, he's going to be drafted. He doesn't have an agent yet. And you hear things like Gary Payton back in the day, I don't need an agent. I just need a lawyer to sign the contract. Well, he's a veteran. That's a little bit different when he's doing stuff with Seattle and the Lakers. But again, here's the thing too. If you're going to get money at the university for some endorsement, having an agent, two things it does. Takes a ton of pressure off the player because agent handle fields all that crap. You're getting phone calls, text, emails about, hey, what deal can we do? And then the agent sifts through all those. Okay, hey, Chandler, I got A, B, or C. Do you want to do this? And so it takes away a lot of the pressure out of the player so he's not getting bombarded. Because there's always that theory, oh, they're going to be just super, super busy. Well, yeah, a little bit more busy. But agent handles a lot of that stuff. And then also the agent's going to get paid during that time anyway. So if Hutchinson gets from Taco Bell, gives them $500 a month, the agent gets whatever the percentage is that. The agent's still making money as an investment. And that so that it does a couple of things. But also get back to all these players' names. Like we need to be careful what we believe or don't believe in this stuff because like I mentioned before, it's not exactly official receipts, it's expense reports, it's a spreadsheet keeping track. So like Fred VanVleet getting money at Wichita State, all this money is and Malik Pope and whatever other guys are getting over $1,000, it's not to get them to go, why did Andy Miller want Fred to go to Wichita State? What's the point of that? It's an
Well,
investment afterwards, right?
yeah, exactly. It's an investment. And like I said earlier, as someone who is studying business, it would make perfect sense for me if you say, okay, sign this dotted line, it guarantees that you pay $2,000 now and you'll get paid $5 million 2 years from now. There's no one that wouldn't sign off on that. That's
Yeah.
just it's just dollars. It just makes sense. So if you're able to develop connections with these players when they're junior, senior in high school,
Which
and
already happened, by the way.
yeah, of course. It's going to happen regardless whether these rules are in place or not, because these agents, and I know they're getting a bad rap right now, but they're just trying to make money and they're trying to improve their clientele. And how they do that is they invest in players who will succeed as professionals. And if you're able to legalize these processes, then I think that improves the game both at the college and the NBA level.
So before we move on, will this change? Like you mentioned that Mark Emmert, what he said on the Saturday morning CBS hoop show, do you think they'll open it up just to change this? Where, hey, yeah, you can get, they'll put, obviously there'll be some rules in place of some degree, but do you think anything will change by a couple years? Like, hey, yes, you can have an agent because college hockey, you can have an agent, but you can't for sport A, B, or C. I think if the school's not paying for it, because like, SEC made $41 million. What do they get for their TV revenue? Each school. What are they going to do with that money? Just pay coaches $20 million? There's still going to be, here's the thing, another, what will come up for sure, and you're probably familiar with this transfer stuff. We already discussed before, well, if you can transfer without penalty if a coach leaves, or not, or one time without penalty, whatever, it's not a big deal. Here's the thing, there's still going to be transfer rules in place. You can't go from Texas Tech to, well, that's a decent school, but just say SMU.
If you said UNLV, that would be pretty ironic with the Chris Beard
Yeah,
stuff,
but what I'm
but go
saying,
ahead.
I was thinking of like a school a little bit lower, like SMU's okay, but like University of Houston, or I'll go back to Stephen F. Austin or Utah State. If you're at Utah State, you blow up and you go to and say, oh, Arizona wants you, you still have transfer and eligibility rules to go through. So it's not like you can just transfer just because you have a better deal. You still have to wait. You know what I mean? There could be guidelines in place like that, which would curb 24/7 recruiting, 24/7 aid. You know what I mean? Like, it'll cut down on all that stuff.
I don't think much is going to change under Mark Emmert as long as he's the president of the NCAA. I just don't see that happening. He seems pretty hard-headed and seems very dedicated to the idea of amateurism and the idea of a student athlete. So
he's a blind eye. That's been done for 20 years. That's been like 15 years, 20 years. That's been out of the window. They just need to open it up, make some regulations, but allow guys to make money off the likeness. They can't put a cap, because once you open it up and then you put a cap of guys can make X amount of money, there's more lawsuits and stuff. But just open it up, like Gary Parrish said, make it all legal, then you clean up the sport overnight. There's no cheating. If you can't cheat, there's no cheating. You know what I mean?
Like, I think if you were to pick any human in the United States to open it up, so to speak, I think Emmert's probably the last guy on the list.
But he should.
He should. He definitely should. I just think he's not willing to do it.
He would be heralded as the best end. Out of all the crap he's done, he would be heralded as one of the best guys who run the NCAA ever if you were to do this.
It would definitely change the stigma that surrounds him, that's for sure.
Because they have no power to do anything.
There are just so many silly rules that are in place right now for the NCAA, like a player receiving – Miles Bridges from Michigan State, this news came out just today that his parents accepted a meal without his knowledge for $40, and Bridges had to pay that $40 back.
Yeah, so
I mean, it's just so ridiculous. I don't know why. Obviously, you have to draw a line in the sand, but in the instances of Bridges and McCaw, it's gone too far.
Oh, real quick, McCaw, do you want to know what date he declared for the NBA draft? Are you curious?
I would love to know this, actually.
April 4th, 2016.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's approximately 2 weeks after this alleged meal occurred.
Which probably all it was that he met the agent like you're legally allowed to do. He just happened to take the money while he was still at the university and still had eligibility left.
It's so silly, because that conversation was likely, if McCaw was even there or if the meal even occurred,
yeah,
it was likely to discuss what McCaw's future was and whether or not he should declare for the NBA draft.
Yeah, like a pitch.
Which should happen. And the Smart. Fact that $178 was spent by someone without the last name of McCaw that's just what happens. I don't know. It's silly.
Another dumber, like, I know I've talked about Ricky Majerus the past month or two on the podcast. He lived, you may not know this, and a lot of people probably don't because he's been gone for a little while coaching and also passed away recently. He lived at the downtown Salt Lake City Marriott Hotel at the penthouse. He did not own a official residence, like a home or apartment at Utah, in Salt Lake City. Part of his contract was, my home is the Marriott, is a hotel. That was his house. So,
what a contract.
It is, yes. So, Eli, how do you eat or visit recruits if you don't really have a kitchen in your hotel room? What do you do? Oh, you go to the local McDonald's, or you go to the restaurant bar or hotel restaurant to give him food. But you're buying a meal for a player. He got in trouble so many times for that, because he's like, what am I supposed to do? I'm in a hotel. It's not going to have an amazing kitchen. What am I going to do? Give him a bowl of cereal? He would go to the McDonald's around the corner. He would order room service, essentially. It's the easiest thing to do. He would get in so much trouble. I think it finally got sorted out, because that's where he lives. That's how he eats his meal. Because if he's bought – here's the thing. What's the difference, honestly? If you have a meal with a coach at your home, isn't the coach still spending money to prepare the meal, right?
Yeah, yeah, so pretty what's much. Difference I mean, you have to pay money to get the food on the table. I know. So it's basically the same thing.
It was the most ridiculous thing ever. It's like, dude, just let him go to McDonald's. Like, obviously, don't make it there's the recruiting guys who bust out the 5-star meals. They order a lot, surf and turf. You know what I mean? $300 meals where it's on the school. It's not like that. He's just going to get a guy maybe $20 between the two of them. And so it's like, what's the deal?
I'm sure he probably lost a few recruiting battles because he had to get McDonald's or something in the room service while other players get the surf and turf or lobster things at other places.
Who's not even at the university, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
Because coaches can have coaches' barbecues. They come out and hang out. You can go do that, like team parties and stuff. But
shout out to Bruce Pearl. He knows a little something about under the table barbecues. Yeah, I think we've worn this one out. Yeah, I think we're both on the same page.
Make it legal, end everything. All right, let's go to other non-game stuff. Colorado State finally parted ways mutually, I
It
guess.
took a while.
A month, right? 6 weeks?
I don't know if it was that long.
So
2 weeks after being placed on paid leave of absence.
oh yeah, we should mention it's Larry Stacey. Sorry, that's who's gone. And as expected, the reason why, oh, it doesn't say specifically, but negotiating a buyout. Because he's on paid leave till July 1st, because remember the contract year stuff, June 30th of every year. So he's like, you can either pay me more if I'm gone now, or you can keep me on whatever my monthly deal is, or my salary through the end of June, then pay me. Then he's getting paid the seven, three figure or six figures, $750,000 in three installments. So $250,000 by what, 2019, I believe it is. So probably every 6 months he'll get some big check. So I'm not surprised he got money, but I think the Rams just didn't want the headache of firing him without causing going to lawsuit, and then still have to pay him nearly $3 million plus legal fees.
I think it's best for both parties that it was resolved this way. I think I might be a little bit surprised. Are you surprised by this end result?
No, they should have fought it, fired him, and paid him $0, because what was written in his contract, zero tolerance clause was put in the contract. I think they could have fought it, not fought, but fired him with cause and paid him nothing.
Yeah, I'd like to sign a zero tolerance clause that pays me 750K.
Yeah, and that's basically what 250 per year left on his deal, I believe. Yeah, because he had a three, yeah, through 2021, so three more seasons. So I'm not surprised he's gone, because we knew this he was going to come, and so is his assistant. He's gone too. But one thing I did note, I forget who had it out. I think maybe Sean Starr had it from the Herald Reporter. There's some deal, some confidential clause in there. Basically, you can't badmouth other party, either side. You Stacey or the Rams can't say any bad things about each other.
How do you enforce that?
Probably with some penalty, like non-disclosure stuff. If you talk about this, if you say anything about this item, you owe us this amount of money.
Oh.
So that's it's like the what is it, the Stormy Daniels thing with the porn star and the president.
Oh,
Money
yeah.
comes out, or somebody comes out and talks about it, she can go and talk about it now because somebody broke the non-disclosure fee. Or it's like the icky stuff with like Harvey Weinstein. Well, you're my assistant and whatever. I'll pay, if you talk about this ever, you have to pay me $1 million or something. You're like, here's, or no, it's the other way around. Like, here's $3 million to not say anything. If you say something, you owe me that money back. So that's why a lot of stuff is kept quiet when it shouldn't be. So it's in that vein where I'm betting if either side says negative things within the contract or within what was signed to him, air quotes, resign, either party will probably forfeit some benefit they had. But I think they could have fired him and got out of it without paying him a dime.
Yeah, I think so too. But all things considered, I don't know, this is probably plan B on the list of the best results for CSU, I'd imagine.
Yeah, because you're not paying that much, really. Think about it. Because it's, like I said, it's probably about, I don't know what his monthly salary is, but what, maybe nine, close to $1 million, I think. Because he's still on salary for the end of the midsummer. So we're at March, April, May, June, 4 more months. And if he's getting what's he at, $900,000 about?
Yeah, it's about that.
So 25. So say it's $1 million. He's getting probably, just rounding up, he's probably getting almost a quarter million, 200,000 probably for the rest of the until the contract officially expires. So he's going to end up getting $1 million, which is about a third of his deal. What's left? So, did you see what Joe Parker said?
Oh, yeah, I did see that. That was a pretty solid quote. Do you have that up?
Yeah, I got her in a former AD who's put in place a zero tolerance, wanted him fired, but the new president came in and said, nope, you're gone instead, businessman AD Joe Parker. But this is a text to Matt Stevens, who assumed obviously permission. And he goes, Matt, here's my response. You Stacey error started on my watch. I hired him. I am thankful his time at CSU is over. This was past due. I'm sorry he was allowed to take control of another four classes of young men, and for what they had to endure, I'm thankful there won't be any more. And he wanted him gone because he didn't want to deal with this crap. Yes, winning may buy a little bit of time to do stuff, which he was at the time, but like we've said a million times with you, me, Justin on the show, other stuff, you can yell at guys, motivate them, but you can't throw kick the basketball across the court. You can't grab the guys in an intimidating manner. You can't just get in a guy's face and yell and yell and demean him. You can yell as a group. You can raise your voice clearly. You can get loud. You can bounce a basketball or just, you know, I mean, just do something silly like that. But he's like kicking basketballs. It's not like he was mad and just threw it across the gym. Like, I can tell that's acceptable. But when he's, there's a reason you see she had close practices forever. He was doing stuff where it wasn't just paranoia of getting secrets out of the plays. It was the way he coached. And so there's an article I haven't read yet from, I think, from Denver Post. Kyle, is it Kyle Fredericks? Is he do stuff for the Denver Post, I believe? But regardless, he talks about, it's a piece where he talks about what can a coach do or not do. But he says he just went past the line. That's all there is to it. And so he's gone.
Especially under his zero tolerance policy.
Which should have been fired day one. That's what I'm saying. Rams, I don't know. I guess lawyers probably threatened crap and did stuff to make this happen. But basically, if you're a college coach and you get fired, you're getting money somewhere one way or another.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, that's the case in most of these instances, that's for sure.
So what's next? Like, we put up a list a while ago. Is it still the same half dozen guys we're looking at?
Yeah, I think so. I have seen a few other lists, but for the most part, some of the same names are shared. A lot of mid-major head coaches from conferences that are maybe a tier or a tier below the Mountain West, or some assistant coaches that have ties. So we'll see if some names start to pop up, and I'm sure they will over the next month or so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we definitely have a list of some solid candidates on our site if you want to check that out.
Yeah, I put it on the front page. We won't go through them all because we did before, just because we have. And so it's just check it out. So hold on. Whoops, I'm gonna play video. Awesome. So let's I don't know. We talked for a long time. Any pressing actual basketball stuff we want to discuss?
I guess if we're still on Colorado State, I think it, for the Rams fans that are listening to this, I think it is worth noting the CSU-Nevada game on Sunday, because the Rams, as we mentioned, they're playing without their head coach, Larry Eustace. Jace Hurley is the interim head coach, and CSU is also playing without J.D. Page, who was suspended due to a violation of team rules. And even regardless, CSU competed very closely with Nevada for a solid 40 minutes in Reno. The final score is 92-83, but this one was a close one throughout, and Colorado State actually looked like they might have a chance to finish this thing out in the stretch. So you definitely have to give credit for how Colorado State competed. It certainly wasn't one of Nevada's best games of the year, but for a team that has gone through a lot and will finish 10th place in the Mountain West, just a year removed from their second place finish, I think you have to give Colorado State a hand for how they played on Sunday.
Oh yeah, Nevada, congrats, you won back-to-back titles. Now we get to it, 50 minutes in. We had a shirtless Must spotting as well.
Yeah, that was, yeah, he said he would, and he came through again.
So yeah, Rams are bottom. They got the number one seed, Nevada, Boise number two. There's a Monday night game right now, just ended 54-48, 0 points essentially, no team wanted to play offense. Fresno won. They're without Deshaun Taylor the rest of the way with the foot injury, but the Bulldogs are probably going to finish. They're going to get a bye, I'm assuming, right? With them not having 11 conference wins, are pretty much assured of that, I believe.
Yes, tonight's victory, or I guess Monday night's victory over Air Force, does guarantee that Fresno State will be a bye. So we'll see. Their next game is against New Mexico. That one is in Albuquerque, and that game will determine who will be the 3 seed and the 4 seed. So the winner of that one will be the 3, and the loser will be the 4. Earlier this season, Fresno State did defeat New Mexico at home. That was 89-80 back on January 13th.
Oh, wait. Do you know what the tiebreaker is between those two schools?
I do have it up, yes. It is record between the two teams. So that is worth noting. It isn't necessarily the winner-take-all unless one of these tiebreakers indicates that. The first tiebreaker is record between tied teams. So obviously, if Fresno State wins, then they're set. The second tiebreaker is record against the highest seeded team not involved in the tie. So Nevada. Neither of these teams beat Nevada.
However, wait. But there's that tiebreaker ends at that point. You know why?
Does it end?
Jeff Grammer mentioned, we were chatting on Twitter, I forget which team it is, New Mexico, is 0-1 versus Nevada. They only play one time all year. Fresno is 0-2. Technically, New Mexico would have the better record for some reason.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm not kidding.
Is that really? Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, that's what he said. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like,
so it comes down to how the schedule's formatted? That's ridiculous.
Essentially. I'm like, we're talking back and forth. Gosh. I'm like, go to the next best team. You could go by winning percentage.
That's, no, I don't, I'm not with that at all.
It's terrible.
And never mind the fact that these schedules are already pretty unbalanced to begin with.
No kidding.
Sheesh. Fresno State gets the short end of the stick.
Is New Mexico going to get a bye?
Yes, they are.
So who's the next team?
After Fresno State and New Mexico?
Who's going to get it? Wyoming or San Diego State? I guess UNLV has a small chance.
Yeah, it would have to be San Diego State?
Well, they're both tied. If they beat each other, beat Wyoming,
we have to go through that lame tiebreaker. No, it would have to be Wyoming, right? Because Wyoming has a win over Nevada.
Let's look at the
final. In the case that they tie, because Wyoming and San Diego State did split.
Well, my point, let's go easy. You're overthinking, Eli. Aztecs play Boise and then versus Nevada to end the season. Where Wyoming plays Air Force and not Boise State, so...
Okay, true.
Wyoming, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
you're overthinking it, man. There's two games left.
Now that we have all these ridiculous tiebreakers, I don't even know where to begin with. This is as bad as BPI.
Oh, boy. Guess what?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the seeding, though, between the teams seeded, 5-8? And, of course, with the Fresno State and New Mexico, because we're just two games or less away from Mountain West Tournament play, and only four of the seeds have been determined. And that's Nevada at number one, Boise State number two, and Colorado State 10, and San Jose State at 11.
Very true. And also what's going to be interesting is that because it's six teams play, so 1, 2, 3, well, I'm counting six, but so if it's Wyoming, UNLV, or San Diego State, like there's going to be a good team in the opening round game.
Yeah, definitely.
Because UNLV, yeah, they're at home, whatever, but they're fairly solid, even though they're what we thought they were. They're a pretty good, okay team.
One correction. Air Force is locked into the number 9 seed with their loss tonight.
Okay, so that was previous. Okay, so those three spots. Utah State probably doesn't have a chance anymore, I don't think, to get up there. So they're probably in that opening round game. But like Sam Merrill, Kobe McEwen, like, come on, they could do something. You know what I mean? There'll be some decent games. Even CSU, like, even I know the JD Page is gone as well, but they're short some heart, but. After next week's show, we will have – is next week – will we know the bracket next Saturday when we record next Sunday, right?
Yeah, and then we'll be off to Vegas.
You and I in Vegas.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun.
Partying, right?
Yeah.
We will have – we'll figure something out.
And working.
we'll have some fun. We'll figure some stuff out for coverage-wise. Maybe we'll do some Facebook Live videos. We'll do a bunch of podcasts to get you guys up and going and knowing what we're doing, staying up well past our bedtimes probably, recording and doing work and stuff.
And I have brackets I need to make because that's the weekend before Selection Ooh. Sunday. So I'm not going to get much sleep that weekend, but it's all in good fun.
That's right. He checks CBB. Is that it?
That's right.
Yes, thanks I get it call. Right. Finally. Check it out. All right. That's all we got for tonight. So if it's a day late, probably 2 days. So this may not be up till Tuesday morning, but thanks for tuning in. We chatted a ton about NCAA stuff. Make it legal. That's all you gotta say, Emmerich. Come on, make it legal. Let them earn money.
Do the thing.
Just flip the switch and your job. You'd be the most celebrated man in America. That's all I got. Check us out: iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn, Spreaker. Give us a review if you like the podcast. Let us know. Share it to your friends. Subscribe. But we'll be back next time. And yeah, later, folks.